You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 4 March, we've got local 2024 Q4 GDP data due 11:30 this morning. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Comrade Mepuwani, Sanlam results. I thought they were really good. Nice dividend yield, perhaps not too expensive. Maybe the big issues, climate change risks, we'll get Comrade's view. Mario Fisher from Old Mutual Investment Group, finding opportunities in a very concentrated global market. We understand how the Mag 7 is dominating indices. Where else can you find opportunity? And then Sarah Sakela from Absa Group, February PMI. Further weakness. There is only literally one bright spot there. Everything else looking bleak. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. Trump triggers tariffs on Canada and Mexico, set to go into effect today. The White House also says Trump signed an order doubling the Chinese tariff to 20%. Business Day, cautious optimism after new vehicle sales continued rebound in February. 47,978 vehicles sold last month. That's up 7.3% on Feb 24. Morning markets. US was red. S&P down 1.75%. NASDAQ down 2.2%. The East is mixed. Sydney's up 0.25%. Tokyo is down 1.8%. Hong Kong down 0.4%, and Tencent up 0.75%. Commodities, mostly green. Gold futures, 2,901. The Brent is red, 71.22. Platinum, 970. Palladium, 944. Rand, 18.61. Bitcoin, 83,900. And top 40 opening call, red open, about 340 points or 0.4% lower.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Training now with Comrade Mepuwani. Comrade, appreciate the early morning time. The sometime results, and initially the market had the stock up a fair bit, although by the close of trade it was down just over 1%. I got to say, I looked at it and I thought, these are decent numbers. Nice dividend, not the most demanding PE, although maybe for a short-term insurer, a sort of high teen PE is a bit rich. Your take on the results and the valuations of Sanlam?
Yeah, Simon, I think definitely in terms of what you said, that share price was speaking volumes for me. Yes, the numbers were really strong and really good, and obviously coming off some good momentum. Mm-hmm. There were some key shoots. We saw them seeing great success in the MTN device insurance offering. MyWay seeing a turnaround as well. But it seems to be that the market views that the share price is full, and that's come through in that share price.
It absolutely has. I mean, and that, you know, I suppose in a sense the market rules. And climate change, I mean, they did make the point that weather-related claims now twice as high. That certainly is, for the short-term insurers, one of the risks out there.
Absolutely. I think also one of the key things, it's just unpredictable. You know, I'm sure if you're an actuary and you sit there with your models, you just cannot predict what's going to happen with the weather. And so that needs to be factored in. And as they've mentioned, they've seen a significant rise over the last 10 years in terms of claims on that side. So I know the CEO did say that it's going to continue going forward. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as I said, I don't know how you predict what the weather's going to be unless you just increase the insurance premiums in terms of those specific claims.
That's a good point. Yeah, because as a short-term insurer, you have that flexibility to increase claims. You can basically, premiums, you can reset every year. The challenge with that, quite simply, is that, I mean, at some point you might just price yourself out because, as you say, those actuaries are, I mean, they are scratching their pencils. They haven't, I mean, it really is the unknown.
Yeah, you have to have that delicate balance, as you said, between, you know, where you get to a point that it's just not viable for a consumer or, let's say, a farmer for extreme cases to just keep having an increase in the premium. We know what's happening with disposable income across the country. But in the same breath, the insurer has to weigh that in terms of how they make their money and how they reduce their risk on their balance sheet as well.
Yeah, it is a balancing act. And I take your point. Good numbers, but perhaps a fully priced stock. We'll leave it there. Kamal Mapuwani, independent analyst. Always appreciate the early morning time. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Do you hold short-term insurers? There are perhaps some good value. There is risks to climate change. As I say, they can reset pricing. That, of course, just adds the risk of alienating your clients. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting now with Mario Fisher. You find him head of quantitative research and also the co-portfolio manager of the Old Mutual Global Managed Alpha Fund. This, of course, from Old Mutual Investment Group. Mario, appreciate the time this morning. The fund that your Global Managed Alpha Fund been around for, 8 years almost. And you use the MSCI All Country World Index as opposed to the MSCI World Index. What is sort of the key difference between the two? I think many of my listeners are thinking that just sounds like the same, but the All Country does change it. What does the All Country bring to the index and hence the benchmark?
Good morning, Simon, and thanks for having me this morning. The benchmark choice is firstly the first active decision that any investor needs to make. The developed market index, the MSCI World Index, covers 23 developed market companies, economically developed, and that is about 1,500 stocks in total, spread across 23 countries. The All Country World Index includes emerging markets as well, so that goes to about 47 countries, but it doubles the number of stocks you can access to about 3,000. When you add the emerging markets to the developed markets, it only adds 10% by weight, but it doubles your opportunity set.
Okay, I get your point there. And I imagine it's still the All Country World Index is still going to have a large concentration in those tech stocks we're always talking about. But by bringing in some emerging markets, and these are giant markets, I mean, think China, India, Brazil, the like, you get more exposure to other sectors. I'm thinking energy, I'm thinking perhaps consumer goods, which are maybe not as dominant or as prevalent in developed world indices.
Correct, yes. What you get is still tech dominance. About 25% of the index by weight is still made up of technology companies. And the big US tech companies still dominate. That's not the question. But what you get here is access to, as you said, energy, consumer services in emerging markets. That's where the spending happens in emerging markets. They're not necessarily tech-driven. And what you get is a dampening effect of those mega caps. They're about 10% lower weight in total in All Country World than in the developed market index. But an interesting point to note is the U.S. component by number of shares in All Country World is about 700 stocks. And you get the same equivalent number of stocks in China that you can access.
Ah, okay. And the key thing, and in the note you were putting out recently, you talk around emerging markets. They're what, 20% of sort of market cap globally, but they're around 45% of global GDP. We can debate lots about it, but the short answer is, in essence, they're underrepresented. This is going to be an area of growth, maybe not this year or next, but in the medium to long term, we're going to see that uplift. And in theory, we should see their market cap value sort of reflect the GDP.
Correct, yes. So we see a similar phenomenon in equity markets, where if you pick the correct small companies, they tend to grow faster than their larger counterparts. So you get a higher return on value by investing in these smaller companies. That analogy can be carried into markets as well. So emerging markets, because they are growing and they are developing economies, they would tend to develop at a faster rate than developed markets over time. And the countries that get them right from a geopolitical point of view and from an economic point of view, they would potentially generate a higher return than countries that are quite stable and economically developed already.
They've, in a sense, they've got almost a better increase or higher levels of productivity because of that expansion of GDP, the expansion of the economies.
That's correct, yes. And also the type of industries in emerging markets are more industrial based, not as technology driven as more developed markets. And what you would get then is infrastructure investment. You'd get investment in machinery, production, equipment, and then also a more working labor force. And all of that combined should potentially give you better growth prospects.
In the near term, you mentioned the countries themselves getting their geopolitical situations well positioned. We certainly have heightened geopolitical risks under the second Trump presidency. He's announced overnight a doubling of tariffs from China from 10% to 20%. This is going to be a challenge. It's going to be a concern. I imagine it's more perhaps of a short-term issue, but it is. I mean, does it put a significant dampen, or is it something which, I mean, China learned to navigate, perhaps, as we see a sort of repositioning of the global order?
I think that is the way to look at it. I mean, this is not the first time this is happening. I mean, Trump's been in this position before. There were tensions with China before. I think this is a rerun, maybe a different take on it this time around. For the most part, it should be priced in. So people are already accounting for any effect that would have. But as I said, the market is a very volatile animal, so it's always different from day to day. We try our best to navigate that and then generate a return for our clients.
But you make a great point there. I mean, this is Trump's second presidency. He started tariffs in his first presidency. There were tensions beforehand. But importantly, the in-between presidency was President Biden. And of course, he didn't remove the tariffs of anything. He, in many cases, actually increased them. This is it might feel new, but we're a decade into this now.
That's correct, yes. And again, the whole incident or interview with the Ukrainian president, and that just reinforces the point of view of the American presidency. And we have to navigate and react to that accordingly, not overreact, not underreact. We have to see what kind of effect that's going to have on markets, how that's going to affect groups of stocks, groups of countries. And because our process is factor-based, we are less emotionally invested in the investment process. And for us, it has to come through in the numbers. So as history repeats itself from time to time, we react to that. Most of the time, it just comes out in the wash. So we try in our process to be as objective as we can.
And the key point always is never panic. There's no benefit to that. I like your point. It comes out in the wash. Mario Fisher, he's head of quantitative research. He's also a portfolio manager of the Old Mutual Global Managed Alpha Fund from OMIG. Appreciate the early morning time. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for three decades.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Sela Sekelo, economist at Absa Group. Sela, I appreciate the time. We had the Absa PMI down slightly, 0.6% to 6% points rather, to 44.7 in February. This is the fourth month under 50. We had some signs of life. October, September were looking good, but that really has faded away. And our manufacturing generally is really under pressure as per the PMI data.
Yeah, so as you correctly point out, the PMI has been quite weak. And when you look at what has been driving it on the downside, it has been business activity and new sales orders. Now, what's interesting here is that when it comes to new sales orders, the weakness in demand is mainly on the export side, and manufacturers citing geopolitical tensions as one of the reasons this is the case.
I take your point. I mean, we're seeing what's happening globally. Geopolitically, things are tensing up. I suppose that is a global issue beyond our control. But to your point there, locally, perhaps we're not as bad in terms of internal sales.
Yeah, so locally, things are not great either, but they're not as bad. So there's a number of reasons why. So if you think about, you know, the consumer, there we are seeing consumer balance sheets repairing, given the low inflation, the cut interest rates, as well as some money that's coming in from the two-pot retirement savings withdrawals. And then in terms of structural reforms, those are still continuing. Yes, we had load shedding coming back, but it looks like more of a blip than a systematic issue. And then on the rail side, yes, the Transnet turnaround plan is moving slow, but it is moving nonetheless.
You also, in the note that was put out, talk around ongoing material supply challenges, logistical issues. Some of that, I imagine, is Transnet, but is some of that also just wider in terms of logistics and supply chains?
Yeah, it's definitely wider, because what we tend to see is that when business activity is declining, supplier performance tends to, the index measuring supplier performance also tends to decline. But if it's rising, right, and business activity is falling, what that tells us is that despite weak activity, supplier delivery times have lengthened. So they can only lengthen because of one reason, and that's supply chain issue. So it looks like it's wider than Transnet, because manufacturers also use trucks to transport their goods. So it's definitely wider.
You mentioned cost pressure mounting. This is weaker rand, input costs, petrol, oil prices. And of course, we've got Eskom increases coming in the next little while as well. There is pressure on those inputs, and that hurts.
Yeah, so if you look in February in specific, we think that was mainly as a result of the fuel price increase. But I can say that as Absa Research, we are quite optimistic about the rand. We still think that the rand can appreciate to about 17.50. And then we should look at what analysts are saying about Brent crude oil. There, they're expecting Brent crude oil to slowly come down a bit. So that should be good for at least fuel prices going forward. So that, coupled with our forecast that CPI inflation this year will be 4% from 4.4 last year, should give some relief to the sector.
Okay, and a 4% CPI will certainly help everyone, consumers as well. The employment index is still contracting. I mean, unemployment is one of the massive crises in South Africa. And unfortunately, you know, we saw the unemployment data, and it's confirmed by PMI in that we've had 11 months of contraction in that particular sector within the PMI.
Yeah, so what this tells us is that despite us seeing some improvement in the employment numbers in the sector of in Q4, right, that's unlikely to be sustained, because general business conditions in the sector remain quite difficult. So I guess the manufacturers want to see sustained improvement in activity for them to significantly increase payroll. So if you look at employment, for example, in the sector relative to where it was pre-pandemic, it's not yet there. And the reason is exactly what I said, that, you know, business conditions in the sector have been quite challenging for some time.
Business confidence overall, the sector did weaken down 4.4 points, but it's still, what, 60.5. We talked around geopolitical, we've talked around cost pressures. There is still an underlying confidence in the broader manufacturing sector.
Yes, so this is one of the, you know, highlights that positive, right? That yes, things are looking a bit bleak, but manufacturers are still quite optimistic about activity moving forward. And we suspect that that's mainly because of domestic developments. Because if you look on the international stage, there is some trade tensions that are brewing, and there is more downside than upside, especially also if you look at our important market like China, right, where the stimulus package is not pushing economic growth as much as the authorities would like it to.
Yeah, take the point. The internal confidence, perhaps better more than the global. We'll leave it there. Sela Sekela, economist, Absa Group. Always appreciate the time. That's it for today. Yesterday, I was chatting with Connie Bloom. She MD of Mesh.Trade. We're talking around their tokenized Troy Gold. Ultimately, it tracks the yellow metal, but you can buy from as little as $50. And at 31.1 grams, you can, well, take receipt of your Kruger Rand. We asked, are you still buying gold? 40% said yes, buying lots. Third said no gold for you. A fifth said you already have enough. And the rest were saying you are taking profits. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again tomorrow. Discovery.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.